start off on a Friday night. At 8 o'clock tonight was the reach out to my brother. We had the pleasure of doing this. Seth joined the show together where he allowed me to be the co-host. We had a great time. I learned so much. And they won the Super Bowl. So without further ado, let's go to the Comcast Business Hotline, bounce forward, and check in with the man from NBC Sports Philadelphia. You saw him on pre and post. My guy, Seth Joyner, Eagles Hall of Famer. Seth, what's up, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, man. Hey, I like that music, man. A little bit of Busting Loose. That takes me back, man.
Oh, man. That's good, man. But no, listen, we wanted to get you on, man. The season is done. You know, we've been chatting here and there throughout the season, and everybody's been watching you on the pre and post game. And as the season kept going on, we just kept seeing the frustration in your face, the sounding in your voice of what this team has done, man. So before we get to what we were talking about as the topic tonight, I just wanted to get your overall thought on what the season was at 4-11-1 and how disappointed you were in this team.
Oh, my gosh, man. You talk about a mess. I mean, from the word go, you know, obviously, you know, the 900-pound gorilla in the room, you know, the quarterback play. And, you know, then you add the injuries to it, you know, questions about play calling. I'm not so sure that I've ever seen a Philadelphia Eagles team go through a season quite like this. And you know, there are some extenuating circumstances. You know, when you add the COVID and all of that, and no training camp, no OTAs, no preseason games, I think everybody knew that it would be a shaky start. But I don't think anybody envisioned, you know, 4-11-1.
Not at all. So as you just laid out all those things, and quarterback obviously being, as you said, the 900-pound gorilla, would you look at that as the singular issue that really started this off? Or do you more so go with the quarterback, pardon me, the head coaching, the offensive coordinator calls, or even the personnel in which we have our frustrations with what Howie Roseman has or has not done with this team?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, people watch me throughout, you know, the first 12 games of the year and thought that I was anti-Carson Wentz. And nothing could have been further from the truth because, you know, when he played well, I was one of the people that really talked about, you know, how well he was playing.
Well, I'll stop you right there and take you back to our show when you mm-hmm. talk about him that season when you felt he was phenomenal.
Well, but you know, when you become critical of the quarterback, and then you have, you know, factions. You know, you've got the let the Bronco buck community, you know, over on the other station. You've got what I call the Wentz apologists. You know, all of those things, you know, come into play. My job is to analyze. And sometimes, you know, I can be critical, sometimes maybe overly critical, but, you know, who I am is just, you know, who I am. And that's the way, you know, I go about, you know, my critique, where props are due, I give them, and where, you know, critique is, or criticism is due, I give it as well. That being said, you know, in no way do I put everything that happened on Carson Wentz, but I also believe that, you know, when you're the franchise quarterback of a football team, and you're the face of the franchise. When things are going bad, you can't exacerbate, you know, the situation with your play. And I felt like that's what he did. He never really made, in my opinion, any adjustments to his game. You know, and people will talk about, the fact that, you know, they were injured, you know, the offensive line, you know, no wide receiver talent, you know, all of those things, you know, have been well documented. But the biggest problem I saw with Carson this year was his decision-making process. And I think that, you know, when you're the quarterback and you're the main guy, you know, on the team, you know, your decision-making has to be impeccable. Now I'm not saying that it has to be perfect, but you can't average, you know, two turnovers a game. You can't stand in front of the media and tell the media, hey, you know, I'm just going to keep doing what I've been doing. keep giving my guys, you know, opportunity to take, keep taking shots down the field. You know, when you're turning the ball over at such an alarming rate.
So frustrating.
There are some adjustments that you have to make. And I just felt like he was just downright combative, you know, and not making those adjustments and continuing to do things the way that he was doing. Now, when I talk about decision, you know, when a play doesn't break down, when a play breaks down or no one's open, the quarterback has got options. Okay, you can either throw the ball away, you can take off and run, you can take the sack and rely on your defense to, you know, get you another possession. There's so many things that you can do, but to try to force the ball downfield, to try to play hero football, you know, when the team is already in dire straits and you have to almost play perfect to have any shot at winning, your quarterback can't make those types of decisions. And to me, that was the biggest problem that Carson faced this year.
Seth joining us on the Comcast Business Hotline, 97.5 The Fanatic here. And Seth, how much of that, when you talk about the quarterback, how much of that do you then lean on your head coach to help him get out of the issues that you're speaking of?
Well, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I'm not going to put it all on him. He's a big part of it. But at the same time, you know, Doug could have done a better job all season long of, you know, putting Carson in better position to make plays and to be successful. I want to say the Dallas game, and we were doing pregame on you know, NBC Sports Philly. And Barrett was talking about, oh, we got to come out, we got to run the ball. I'm like, you know what? We've been saying that ever since Doug has been here. I said, you know, my hope for that is completely lost. Because at the end of the day, Doug Peterson wants to throw the football, okay? Everybody wants to talk about the different offense that he called for Jalen Hurts. But if you go back and you look at the numbers, the methodology was exactly the same. Now, if they were successful running the ball, he would stick with it. But from his perspective, success running the ball early just opens the door for him to be able to throw it. And then he kind of gets stuck throwing it. And, you know, even much more so with a rookie quarterback, that's detrimental. Because even if he has the legs to get out. But when you're talking about Carson, you know, the offense can work much more productively when you run the football. Now you got play action pass. You got bootlegs. You got misdirection. All the things that everyone talks about, because Doug never gets him out of the pocket. Well, you can't get him out of the pocket until you first establish the run. And you can't establish the run until you commit to running the football. And let's just be honest. You know, Doug Peterson does not want to run the football. Mm-hmm. You know, when Miles Sanders is averaging 15 to 16 carries a game in a season, that tells you, you know, what Doug really wants to do with the football. Okay, and you can talk about, you know, Doug can talk about how the game got away, but more times than not, the game gets away because you throw the ball too much. And then you got a punt or you get a turnover. And those situations, you know, just put your defense back on the field, gives the other team, you know, more possessions and more opportunity to take shots at you. And it's just, you know, it's a cycle. It's a bad cycle, you know, for a quarterback who's actually struggling. Because the running game can actually help him get out of the funk that he may be in.
So with him and then the insertion of Jalen Hurts later on, it's what it is at this point. What would you, Seth Joyner, do based on what you saw? How do you go into this one if you are to keep Carson Wentz and fixing him? And if you are not going to go forward with him, and we understand the contract and all that, what value does Jalen Hurts have if you were to insert him as the quarterback for next season?
Well, you know, listen, everyone thought that I was a Carson hater all season long because, I was critical. Listen, you just signed this guy to a $128 million extension. That kicks in this season. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles, I don't owe him the right to trade him. I don't. if that's what he's asking, I don't owe him the right to trade him. Okay, I just signed him to an extension a year before I had to. So he struggled. I used a second overall draft pick, you know, to pick him up. And yeah, I've got a rookie, you know, second round draft pick that, you know, that I inserted in the lineup for the last four games of the season. But I want to see, if the guy that I drafted second overall, whether he'll compete, because that will tell you a lot about, the type of player he is, the type of person that he is. And I'm not pulling the trigger, you know, to move him unless I get a king's ransom for him. Even then, you know, I think the Eagles are less apt to do it because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they don't like to look bad on their draft picks. You know, Doug feels like he can fix him. You know, Howie talks about, you know, fingers on your hands, you know, that you can't imagine yourself being without. You know, all of those things tell me that, you know, Howie realizes that they got to figure this out. And Doug realizes that, you know, he's also tied to Carson, you know, and he wants to fix the situation because there's no doubting his talent, his ability. Can you get his head where it needs to be? And can you get him, you know, to buy into what you're doing? And can you get him back to where he once was? That's the question.
Yeah, and that thing when he said the fingers, it's like having, come on with these analogies anymore, right? The ice cream a couple of years ago, and now the fingers on it, can't imagine yourself without them. Stop it. You know, it might have been the wrong thing, okay? I mean, come on, pepperoni, all whatever he does. I don't know. Seth Joyner, Eagles Hall of Famer, NBC Sports Philadelphia, join us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Bounce forward. Seth, man, as you look at things defensively, Jim Schwartz steps down and or let go, whatever you want to call his contract was up. He wasn't coming back. What type of defensive coordinator are you looking for them to address in the offseason? And what needs to be done along the defensive side to get them back to that defense that we're accustomed to seeing?
Well, you know, you can look at the success that Jim Schwartz had. It's hard to, you know, when you win a Super Bowl for the first time in franchise history, in some of the years, you know, where they ranked, it's hard to debate, you know, what he put on the field. But in my opinion, ever since Jim Schwartz has been the defense coordinator here, you know, he played a style of defense that the city of Philadelphia is unfamiliar with. You know, we have never been a bend but don't break style of defense. You know, you go all the way back to my defense coordinator, Buddy Ryan. You can go back to, you know, Ray Bob. You can go back to Bud Carson, who took over, you know, the defensive side of the ball after Buddy Ryan, you know, left. You can talk about Jim Johnson. You know, all of these guys had an extremely aggressive mindset. Now, listen. I know most people think that my mindset when it comes to defense is to blitz every play. Nothing could be further from the truth. But you can't play defensive football all the time. Like, you can't play sticks defense all the time. You can't line up, you know, in zone, you know, all the time. There's times where, you know, you played against young quarterbacks this year, and we didn't even take advantage of heating them up and showing them different things that they had never seen before to speed up their clock and to speed up the game for them and force them into situations where they had to make quick decisions. You know, what I want to see in a defensive coordinator is a guy that's much more aggressive. I want to see him formulate a staff that can come in and teach these young men how to play their position from a technical and fundamental standpoint. I want to see us develop some of this young talent that we draft and that we bring in. Because quite frankly, I'm tired of seeing guys like Nelson Aguilar leave and have success. Rasul Douglas leave and have success. Sidney Jones, you know, early in the year, leave and have success. LJ Fort go down and get an extension couldn't play linebacker for the Eagles, but he goes down, you know, to the Baltimore Ravens and becomes a starter and gets an extension. Okay, why is it that we can't develop our young players and yet they can go somewhere else and be, get coaching and get development and begin to flourish? I want to see, you know, coaching is bigger than just X's and O's. Anyone can learn a defense or an offense and walk in a meeting room and hand their position guys a game plan. That's easy. Where the rubber meets the road is, how can I teach him how to be a better linebacker, how to be a better wide receiver, how to be a better defensive back? How can I make him so technically and fundamentally sound that he's always in position to make plays and he doesn't look panicked and he doesn't get PIs because he's panicking and he doesn't get holding calls because he's panicking? You know, that's the kind of defensive coordinator, you know, I want to see. A little more aggressive and much more technical in how you teach your guys to play the game. And then you can have a much more rounded and well-built defense. Now, what they need, hey, listen, you need some talent in linebacker, okay? You tried for the last 5 years to get by with guys that were late-round picks, free agents, guy from Canada, you know, who actually wound up probably being, you know, your best linebacker. But good defenses, you know, because you're forced to play a 4-2 and you only have two linebackers on the field most of the time, now you're almost forced. You better have two guys that are just hellraisers on the field. You know, you need that. And then they've got to go and find a number two cornerback, and they've got to find a guy who has played the safety position the majority of his career, and he's got some safety instincts. Not guys that have moved from corner to safety, not guys that, you know, move from the slot to safety, but guys that are just true safeties and know how to play the position.
And I'll let you go on this one, our topic for tonight, which you kind of just segued into overall with the youth on this squad. You cover the entire league. You see everything. You're based in Arizona. You know the talent they have there, especially, you know, in the secondary with the youth, with Buda Baker and all the guys that they have out there, and on the offensive side as well. Looking at the Eagles in the youth, as they have to start getting younger, where do you assess them right now with their young people as far as their core goes compared to everyone else that you see around the NFL?
Well, I mean, you know, I think Howie Roseman pretty much summed it up, you know, in his press conference with Doug Peterson the Monday after, you know, the last game. You know, they have pretty much mortgaged their situation to be able to, because they felt like their window was open. You know, they did some things personnel-wise to put them in position to be in the playoffs and to try to compete for another Super Bowl. And because they pretty much mortgaged that situation, they haven't rebuilt the roster with youth the way that they needed to. I think the Eagles are one of the older teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm in favor of them taking that sixth pick and trading it. Trade it. So you can turn that six overall pick into multiple picks, because you've got way too many positions that need to be addressed, and your roster is going to look markedly different this year. You know, there's going to be some guys, you know, that are no longer going to be a part of this franchise. There are going to be a lot of new faces on this team next year. And they can't be all free agents. You got to replenish with the young guys through the draft. You got to hit on these guys. And you got to have guys that not only have potential, but you got to have guys that are coachable, guys that, you know, the coaches can shape and mold and get them ready to play quickly. But they're just in a precarious position. You know, you always, when a team goes through a 4-11 in one season, you know, the question always is, okay, can we retool this team with a little bit of youth and through the free agent market, or are we rebuilding? Are we in rebuild mode? And a lot of times, you know, people don't like to hear rebuild because that kind of insinuates that, hey, it's going to be a while before we're competitive again. That may be the truth. That may not be. But that, quite frankly, is where the Philadelphia Eagles are now. They've got to get younger, and they've got to do a much better job, you know, in the draft, bringing in players that are going to be here through a second contract, rather than, you know, you letting them go in their third or fourth year, even before their rookie contract is up. But that's where they are. And as difficult and as hard as that is, you know, for Eagles fans, you know, to have to hear and believe, that's just the truth of the matter. You know, you got some young guys, especially at the wide receiver position. I hear everybody talking about how we need to take Devontae Smith. Well, listen, if you don't improve the coaching at that position, going to get Devontae Smith isn't going to necessarily help you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to draft wide receivers. And I believe, I looked it up the other day, I think the Eagles have drafted 10 wide receivers, I want to say, in the last 4 to 6 drafts. 10 wide receivers. See, in my opinion, you can't go and spend a first-round draft pick on another wide receiver. Not when you just spent one last year and a second the year before. You can't turn around and take a wide receiver at number 6 in this year's draft. You've got too many other needs to address than to take another wide receiver. They got to figure out how to find a coach who can develop these players and teach these players how to run routes, how to stem routes at the top, how to set up routes, how to use their hands to get off the jam, you know, at the line of scrimmage and things like that. Develop the talent that you have, because you've already spent significant draft capital on some of these guys. Doesn't make sense to go and get another wide receiver. Now, I know that's not popular. A lot of people want the Philadelphia Eagles to go and do and take Devontae Smith, but I'm telling you right now, they've got bigger issues. If you can't block, if you don't have depth, if you don't have depth for the offensive line, the way that this football team has been injured the last 3 years, it's not going to make a difference who you have playing wide receiver. Because if you can't block for Carson or Jalen or whoever the quarterback's going to be, it makes no difference who you have playing wide receiver.
Doesn't help locally when both of those guys that they missed on make the All-Pro team announced today. It doesn't help at all.
But before we go, I will throw this out to you, okay? Yeah. If we have not been able to develop our young wide receivers over the years, would we have taken a Justin Jefferson or DK Metcalf?
Yeah, but would they have simply been good enough to even just be good enough to overcome that? It may not have helped the team overall because they still would lose, but those guys would be talents, and you look at them and say they're young people to continue to build with.
Listen, I get that.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. Every young player that comes into the NFL, unless he's had supreme coaching at the collegiate level, they need development, okay? So my point is, you can go and get those talented guys. We can have DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson and Terry McLaurin. We can have all of those guys on our roster, okay? But if you're not developing them and they're not running routes the way that they've been coached to run routes the way they are now because they're successful now, then we just got, you know, we've got these man-childs here underachieving. Just a thought.
Hey, I hear you. Big bro, they're good though, aren't they? Go ahead.
When you watch those guys play, you can just tell that they're just straight up killers.
Straight up killers.
I mean, I just 6'5", 235, running the 4.3. You know, I get the injury issues, you know, but then you talk about Justin Jefferson, and I think a lot of people missed the boat on him because they felt like, oh, you know, he's a slot receiver.
Yeah.
And I'm like, somebody didn't do their homework, because if you go back and you look at, you know, his first year at LSU, you know, wasn't very productive. The second year, Joe Burrow got there, you know, they started to find their way. You know, he had about 50-something receptions for 500-600 yards and 6 touchdowns. And then the coaching staff the following year asked him to move into the slot because that would help the team. Mm-hmm. And everybody looked at him as a slot receiver and forgot the fact that, you know what? This guy's first 2 years on the collegiate level, he was a split. He was an X or a Z. He was a split wide receiver. So you get the benefits of both. A guy who knows how to run routes from the slot perspective, but a guy who spent his first 2 years in college playing split receiver.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.